Here are a few questions. One question that I just picked up is when I start to focus on breath, it's not gross. It's very, very fine, almost feel like no breath. In this case, should I still try to find the breath and focus on it? No thoughts or feelings arise at this moment. I'm not sure on what to do at this particular state. One thing I like to suggest: when you don't feel the breath, it becomes subtler and subtler and subtler, and you don't feel the breath, that time breathe quickly, several times. Then you find the breath again and focus on it. And again, when you lose the touch of breath and don't find it, try again to breathe very quickly. When you try several times, still you cannot find the breath, you definitely will feel the rise and fall of the abdomen. So you try to pay attention to that. So you will have an understanding of rise and fall to gain the awareness of impermanence. That is the nature of all conditioned things, they rise and fall. So that day you can continue your practice. Another question: is there any difference between mind and consciousness? I think so. That is why we have among the aggregates, we talk about consciousness aggregate. If I try to use Pali words to explain it, probably it might be clearer. There are three words used by the Buddha to express the function of mind. Among many, many words, I pick these three words in this case to answer your question. These three words are chitta, mano, vijnana. Chitta means variety. Chitta also is called for pictures. Picture Buddha called chitta. Chalana chitta. One time Buddha asked bhikkhus, have you seen chalana chitta? The chalana chitta is a moving picture. May not be moving, but moving picture. Because the mind, then he gave a simile of animals. He said there are so many animals in the world. Each is different from the other. And mind has a variety of variety in itself, more varieties than the amount and number and varieties of animals. Then we say, even those animals of various kinds are come into existence because of the variety of mind, the various ways the mind works to commit karmas, and therefore they are born in those different states. That means mind has the variety to choose all kind of trillions of things in the universe. That is one function of the mind. And the other is mano. One is chitta, the other is mano. Mano means thinking. Thinking capacity of mind. We can think of all kind of things, and you know how much we can think. There is no end to thinking. No end. Keep thinking, thinking, thinking. That's the other function. And other is called vijnana. Vijnana means consciousness. Consciousness or vijnana means knowing. Knowing whatever the mind does. Variety of things or thinking, whatever. Mind knows. And without consciousness, nothing can be think, say or do intentionally. And therefore, consciousness is another function of the mind. So the mind is the basis, it has these functions. That way, at least I can try to answer that question, to show the difference between the mind and consciousness. Another question, if one has progress a little in the path, would it still help in one's next birth? One has only progressed a little, okay. One has only progressed a little. Surely, that is another example of variety. If you make a little progress, even that little progress of your mind would help you to make the difference in the next life, next birth. So definitely there's, especially in the way of practicing meditation, mindfulness, concentration, when we develop it, that state helps the person to have a different or better state of existence after death. The second question, in what way does it help when you don't eat in the evening? Ah, very good question. And I expected somebody to ask me this question. Actually, in several ways. One, we learn to restrain. Uh, When we learn to restrain, especially train or restrain our tongue, we reduce our greed, desire for food. Food, eating at night is not a bad karma or sin or anything. No, no. But it helps us to train, to be restrained, to discipline, to learn to be content. On the other hand, when we don't eat and meditate, it's very easy to meditate without food in the stomach in the evening. When we eat in the evening and try to meditate, it's difficult to meditate. Buddha said in Kitagiri Sutta, in Majjhima Nikaya, especially for bhikkhus, and he said, "Bhikkhus, I don't eat at night. Therefore, I am healthy. If you don't eat at night, you will be healthy." That means those days, even monks ate at night. So then, there was a monk called Bhaddari. He came to the Buddha and said, "Venerable sir, when you ask us not to eat at night, first I got very upset. Because people bring very delicious meal in the afternoon and in the evening they are very hungry. If you don't eat this meal, people who bring the food would be disappointed. Out of compassion for them, we must eat it." Therefore I was very upset when you asked us not to eat at night. Then he thanked the Buddha, "Venerable sir, of course this is not happening to lay people these days, but this is how it is reported in the time, reported in text as what happened in the time of the Buddha." He said, "Venerable sir, when I was eating at night, I went on Pindapata, taking my aunt board, went from house to house to collect food. One day, I stumbled over a sleeping cow, and this cow got very upset and got up and startled, and I fell down and I was injured. I can avoid that sort of accident in future." Then he said, "One day, I fell into cesspool at night when I was going on ashram. I can avoid that kind of inconvenience in future. Another time, I went and stood in front of, behind, near by the kitchen of somebody. And a woman washed the dishes and brought a big bucket of dirty water and poured on me, not knowing that I was there. That I can avoid in future. Another time I stood there, a woman came out in the dark and seeing me standing there, she got so frightened, she screamed at the top of her lungs, saying that the devil is here. She almost fainted. And then when I said, 'Sister, I'm not a devil, I'm a bhikkhu,' this woman shouted, and she said, 'You gluttonous man, in this dark, pitch dark, you come out to collect food, your stomach should cut out. So greedy. Can't you stay away with one meal?' So she shouted, 'I can avoid that sort of things in future, getting insulted and scolded by people.' One time I went on arms round, I was stung by a snake. I nearly died. I can avoid that kind of. So this is how it started in the time of the Buddha. And that goes on an own long story. For the convenience of monks' monastic life, Buddha asked them not to eat. For lay people who observe the eight precepts, why when they abstain from eating, from creating at night, they can meditate well. Upasatha precept they can observe well. Upasatha means living close to arahants. Upavasatha, upavasana is called living close to arahant. When you live close to arahant, this is not the spatial proximity. It's simply in principles, in practice, we are spiritually closer to arahant. When we are getting spiritually closer to them, what should we do? We follow their examples. One of them is fasting, not eating at night. So, another implication, these are direct application. Implication is, when we sacrifice one meal, there are millions of people suffering. You buy food, you eat. Suppose you save this little money, one day a month, or twice a month. In this case, 8 or 9 days you save, you don't eat. Think about the amount of money you spend. Keep that aside. Donate it to a poor people, to poor country. There are various organizations, feeding the hunger organizations can donate. So we can do a lot of things by not eating. As I said, eating is not a sin, not a bad karma. But when we look at the benefit of not eating, we can find many benefits. In this, our immediate benefit is to make our meditation practice easy. Another question, referring to walking meditation, perhaps there are more than one technique of walking meditation. Coordinating with the breath as taught today, the four elements awareness, carrying, being carried as an example, which one is taught by the Buddha in the Sutta. Now, Buddha simply said the gacchanto gacchami iti pajanati, tito va tito miti pajanati, nisinno va nisinno miti pajanati, and so forth. When we go, we know that we are going and standing and so forth. Other than that, Buddha did not elaborate in the sutta all this. But actually I was going to bring out the second part that you have mentioned in the question, that is becoming aware of elements. Not only that, when we walk very slowly, we can become aware of the intention every time we lift the heel of one foot. While breathing, there is an intention. As soon as the intention arises, there arises what is called chitta kriya vayu dhatu. The air elements would be activated by thinking. to lift the heel. Energy is generated to lift the heel. And we can become aware of the intention, thought, energy that activates the lifting. We can become aware of them. And then, that is intention. Then lifting, we have to intend to lift it. And we have to intend to move it. And we have to intend to stop it. And we have to intend to bring it down and touch the floor and press the foot against the floor. All this we do intentionally. They don't happen automatically. Although they appear to be automatic, but we intentionally do that. That is another part. An element, when we lift and move, air element is active. When we put it down, earth element is active. And when we press, the water element and the air element become active. When we press, you feel very soon, if you stay long enough, you feel setting. That is because of the activation of the air element. And the movement is fire, air element. And then when you stay little longer, we feel heat element activated. We can notice all these elements also when we pay mindful attention and walk very slowly. So all these are involved in this walking. If you walk very quickly, we don't notice any of them. If you walk very slowly, we can notice at least some of them. The technique would be the slow technique, and then paying total mindful attention. By paying attention, we can notice the things that we have not noticed before and cannot notice when we walk very quickly. Another question. When meditating, and your mind goes wandering, you look at that and then it goes to another place. So do we keep jumping from one thing to the other? If so, when do we bring one object back? Okay. Bring our focus back on to the breath. Okay. When we notice something happening, we deliberately don't go after that object. Mind goes naturally. For instance, when you hear a sound, if your hearing is not impaired, the sound will definitely hit your ear. So you hear it. And the mind will go there. So, when we use mindfulness, we don't fight with the sound. We don't blame the sound or the one who made the sound, or blame ourselves, or get disturbed, upset. Use the sound as an object of our meditation. One thing we must remember in mindfulness meditation, no matter what object we become aware of, all these objects are very clearly marked with three things. They all are impermanent, they all are unsatisfactory, they all are without self. These three things are very clearly marked, whether it is sound, smell, taste, touch, thought, imagination, fantasies, daring, no matter what. Everything is marked with these three things. So, when mind goes to an object, we become aware of it, we don't fight, and then after a while, the object will disappear, mind returns to the original subject, that is the breath. Next moment, you hear another sound, or next moment, you remember a thought. Pay attention to it, and notice impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, and selflessness of the thought. But the problem with the thought is when a thought arises, we multiply the thought by thinking of the thought. That is one thing. But if we use the thought as a single object to focus the mind on without adding anything to that, then the thought can be used as an object of meditation to see impermanence, unsatisfactoriness and selflessness of the thought. So, mind naturally jumps from object to object, very naturally. Why is that? That is the very nature of desire. The desire is Pono Bhavika Nandirada Sagata Tatra Tatra Abhinandini. It re-becomes Nandi Radha, enjoyment, attachment to Tatra Tatra Abhinandini. Here we enjoy and here we attach to something. There we enjoy, attach to something, again something else happens. That is the nature. Mind wants object from various things. And therefore, so long as we have a desire, mind functions this way. Therefore, the mindful meditator, in order to minimize this, when focus the mind on impermanence, unsatisfactoriness and selflessness, then the desire for those things slowly subsides. And the mind becomes less and less interested in going from object to object and stays on the breath. So it happens very naturally when we don't struggle. So we don't deliberately jump from object to object. Mind does it almost automatically. What we have to do is to become aware of it, let them go, and let the mind return to the breath. Even when the mind returns to the breath, mind notices only impermanence, unsatisfactoriness and selflessness of the breath. Friends, we will talk more about it. I think we have to be punctual. The very first day we should not go overboard, and you also would be tired. And I hope to see you tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. Yes, 9 o'clock. And those who are observing Upasatha precept, remember to go that you are in Upasatha precept. That's very wonderful practice. And try. Okay?